in the room. Okay, members, you should have heard by now that the ANC has reshuffled committees. And I must also take this opportunity to congratulate Mr. Mosi. But I'm still hoping that we are able to finish all the interviews as scheduled by next Wednesday, so that the committee starts its nomination appointment process on Friday the 7th. Hopefully the members will have a better consensus in the process, and whether I'm part or not part of that process, good luck. But we'll be with you all the way until we finalize this process. I did request that members try and bring together the CASAM issue so that we start shortlisting. Even if we don't do it today, but at least in the coming week, if we can just remind ourselves so that we don't lose that one. And the culprit is there who's created this job for us, Mami Dupi. Guilty as charged, madam. You gave us work. You answer to that, madam, isn't it? Today. Okay. But a special word of welcome to you. It's good to see you here, Mami Dupi, again. And congratulations on your new appointment as the pension adjudicator. Give her a hand.
Having said that,
it's like saying it's a good rebate.
Obviously, some people do not want to overstay their welcome. And I must say that he did his best. And we need to thank him for his leadership on our behalf for the past 4 years. And hope that he will also do the proper thing and over, and so on. And I'm sure that just the meeting that you have with the SRC, you should be able to give him the necessary thanks for his job that he did.
Yes.
The letter was not signed, an email that was sent, so I had to just confirm with him first that, so before we make this announcement, that he knows about it. He did confirm that yes, he was in Cape Town, so he asked his office in Johannesburg to send the letter. But in the course of this morning, he'll send us a signed letter of withdrawal. So that's where we are. Madam Swan.
Thank you, sir. Please allow me to congratulate you on losing your Hollywood status as acting chair and on your, what our friend Eric calls Hollywood status. And on your elevation to the chairmanship of a committee which works under an extremely good minister and which does enviably interesting work. I think if there's one other field that is as interesting as the one we deal with here, then it's science and technology. We're dealing with astronomy and the square kilometer array. I think you're going to enjoy yourself so much. Many congratulations, and in his absence, also to the SRB. clearly, as you say, people were listening. It's only yesterday and the day before that Ruben was described as being, by contrast to the what rural background?
Strong rural.
Only the day before yesterday that Ruben was described, by contrast to who is it, yourself, who has SRB, strong rural background, as being a gentleman in a suit. And lo and behold, here now Ruben is the chairman of agriculture. Wonderful. And if you'll allow me to say on behalf of Paul, Scott, who's not here, and myself, welcome to Mr. Vadi. We are delighted with his appointment. And we look forward so much to working with him because we know it's going to be very pleasant.
Thank you very much, madam. Thank you very much. And thank you all the... We'll have a cake before I go. You can't just leave like that. We'll have a cake. Ms. Mamudupi Moshala. Welcome, Mother. Like I said to you earlier, we're just going to do three things. To give you a chance to talk to your CV, and to also try and converse with collectors to include you in the trial to the SABC. And so that I don't you put you in the defense from the beginning, I would want you to answer that question in the middle. The question that I asked. Not as you start, because I want you to relax first. We hoping to conclude this process by next week, Friday. I mean the interviews by next week, and start deliberations to give the SABC a good board in terms of what the Act prescribes. And secondly, that before Parliament rises, to have this nomination, the appointment finalized for the President to do the necessary authorization and appointment. We've had very good people, as you know. We had 143 good candidates. We shortlisted to 37. You are among the 37. Now, the difficult task is to get to number 12, and I must say it's not easy. You might just make it easier for us to deal with the question. Over to you, Madam.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning, members of the Portfolio Committee. Firstly, I'd like to say, Mr. Chair, it was never my intention to add to the work of this committee. And if that is the consequence of my resignation from the Council, it's my sincerest apology. But I can assure you it was in the best interest of this country that I had to make the move that I made at that point in time. Now, to deal with the issues that have been put on the table. Firstly, with regard to my CV, I will just deal with the highlights of my educational and work career, because I'm sure the members of the committee have had an opportunity to go through the CV. Firstly, just to take us right down to the basics, I started primary school at St. Mark's Primary School in Swaziland. I did my high school at Solomon Mahlangu Freedom College in Morogoro, Tanzania. I completed my high school at Girls High School in Harare, Zimbabwe. And I started my university career at the University of Swaziland. You will note that I undertook all my initial educational career outside the borders of this country. Reason being, my parents were political exiles. That's why I was educated outside South Africa. I did my junior degree at the University of Swaziland, which was a BA law. Subsequently, too, I did my bachelor's in law, which is commonly known as an LLB, at the University of Witwatersrand. And I also did a master's in law also at the University of Witwatersrand in Johannesburg. Subsequently, too, I started my work career. I served my articles at a law firm that is based in Johannesburg and in Cape Town called Naysbury Attorneys. I served my 2 years articles there. Subsequently, too, I was admitted as an attorney of the High Court of South Africa with the right of appearance in the High Court. After my period of articles, I then set out to establish my own practice as an attorney, where I worked as a consultant for various government departments, principal among which was the Department of Communications, which is where I had my first encounter with telecoms and broadcasting and communications law. I participated in various processes. I participated in the licensing of Centec as a carrier of carriers and in relation to their international gateway license. I also participated in the process that undertook the amendments to the Telecommunications Act in 2001. I was instrumental in creating of many of the entities that are currently licensed today, such as the underserviced area licenses, who I then subsequently, on my appointment as a councillor at ICASA, actively participated in their licensing. As a councillor at ICASA, I undertook many activities, but my main area of concentration was in relation to licensing, and specifically licensing within the telecommunications sector. You will see from my CV that I have participated in licensing in amendments of licensing of entities such as the license amendment of WBS, which has now been converted into what we commonly know as the broadband license of IBERS. I was the councillor that chaired the committee that was instrumental in relation to the licensing of IBERS. I was also the councillor that chaired the committee that was instrumental in the licensing of 3G, which is the license that is now held by all the mobile licenses in this country, principally Vodacom, Cell C, and MTN. And thirdly, I was also instrumental in the licensing of the SNO, in the drafting of the license, and in also the negotiation processes that are undertaken with regards to the SNO. Thirdly, and most importantly, I also participated in the license amendment process for the Telkom license, which unfortunately the process was not completed prior to my departure from ICASA, but I'm sure with the promulgation of the Electronic Communications Act, such process will then be completed as soon as possible. So I basically think that gives you a brief background as to my CV and my qualifications and my experience with regard to the sector. Now, to deal with the second question that the Chair has put forth, why, in my opinion, should I be considered to be one of the 12 that should be appointed to the SABC board? Section 12 of the Broadcasting Act is very clear as to what kind of individuals are expected to hold the position of non-executive board members of the SABC board. Principal among which is qualification and experience. I believe, with regard to qualifications and experience, I'm a very strong candidate. I have experience in two areas that are listed under Section 12. I have experience in media law, by virtue of my having been a counsellor at ICASA. I also have vast experience in labour relations law, not only in my position as a ICASA counsellor, but also prior to joining ICASA, I was a commissioner at the CCMA, which then introduced me and gave me a lot of experience with regards to labour-related matters. So that kind of experience I'll be able to bring to the SABC board, should I be considered and appointed as one of the 12 non-executive members of the board. Secondly, another requirement in terms of Section 12 is that the SABC board members must be representative of a cross-section of the South African society. I believe that I represent three areas that are considered to be persons from which are historically disadvantaged in the South African context. These three areas are specifically that I'm black, which was a historically disadvantaged group, I'm female, which is a historically disadvantaged group, and I'm youth, which is also another historically disadvantaged group. So by meeting the three criteria, I believe I will be able to bring the voice of those three sections of our society should I be appointed as a member of the board. Thirdly, and most importantly, I believe that should I be appointed to the SABC board as a non-executive member of the board, I will be able to bring a lot of experience that I've acquired as a counselor. Right now, in our sector, the ECA has been promulgated. SABC will have to move from being a purely broadcasting entity to being an entity that is competitive in a convergent environment. As a person who has worked in, principally in the historically telecom sector, and now in the convergent environment, I will be able to bring my experience and my know-how to the SABC board to assist it in a strategic direction in growing and being a competitive entity in the new environment, especially in relation to its commercial enterprise. I will be able to bring all that technical knowledge and experience to the table to help it facilitate and to grow. Secondly, I was involved in the committee that participated in drawing up guidelines by ICASA for satellite news gathering. I believe that with the 2010 games that are coming to South Africa, satellite news gathering will play a core part in the business of the SABC. And it's important that the SABC position itself properly in order to be competitive in that arena and to be able to deliver effective and efficient service in relation to broadcast on sports in the 2010 games. So I believe that information or that know-how on my part will play a crucial part towards the advancement of the objectives of the SABC. Last but not least, we are all aware that there is a need in the broadcasting environment to migrate from analog to digital. I have been instrumental in dealing with the CENTEC license and also dealing with some of the objectives that have been undertaken with regards to the migration process, both at the ICU level and domestically. So I believe with that kind of experience and that kind of know-how, I will be able to add the required value to the SABC board in relation to its work going forward. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Ms. Fox, Mr. Peter.
Thank you, Chairperson. Ms. Mashala, it only seems like yesterday, in fact, that we were interviewing you for the accountant position for which you were selected. And now, clearly, you've moved on to the Office of the Pension Fund Adjudicator. So now you're seeking a position on the board of the SABC. And my question really is, when is enough enough? I mean, why is it that you really, I mean, sure, I appreciate the public commitment, no doubt, the public service, but I'm just really interested in your, so soon after deciding to leave ACASA, being given this huge job as pension fund adjudicator, that you will find the time to dedicate to the SABC board and no doubt the subcommittee. So really, that's the first question. Secondly, you indicated, which of course does not disqualify you in any way whatsoever, your strong ANC exile background, but what in having that history, and given the current perceptions, whether they're real or not, of political partnership within the ANC, within the SABC, how would you attempt, one would assume, should you be selected to be on the board, to free the SABC from these perceptions, taking into today's business day, how SABC doctors its NASA coverage, and so on and so forth. So, as a woman, as a black woman, as you point out, and as a black youthful person, how would you not only do that, but then inject, what is it about being a black woman, being young, that you would hope to do if you were on the board? And lastly, I'm afraid I must raise the issue of exit interviews which came before this committee when you were in ACASA, which were highly critical of your management style. And indeed, some interpersonal relationships when you were on the ACASA council. So I think it's only appropriate, seeing that we were, people brought to our attention, that we raise them and give you an opportunity to respond to some of the quite serious allegations that were made about your alleged intentions and so on and so forth when you were at council.
Thank you. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Honourable Member Smith. I mean, Honourable Member Ford, my apologies. Okay, I'll take the questions in reverse order. I think I've noted five questions that were asked by the Honourable Member. Okay, on the first issue about custom, temper tantrums, interpersonal relationships, and management style, I'm actually using your words. Temper tantrums, I don't recall, but as far as I'm concerned, I'm not a person who suffers from temper tantrums. I think I'm an even-tempered person. You have worked with me for a period of close to 6 years, and I'm sure in all the time that I've presented before this committee, I don't think at any point have I ever exhibited any inability to control my temper or to have any meanness that is in any way unbecoming. Now, with regard to the issue of management style, it's a very interesting proposition that's being put forth. But at ACASA, yes, we were at council level, and we were responsible for the strategic leadership of that entity. But as for management style, any form of interaction with the staff was at a very limited level, and it was at the committee level. And as I stated at the previous interview, that what was put before this committee was not a balanced view of my performance at the council. There are many members of staff who had worked with me directly and for prolonged periods of time who were not given an opportunity to come and present their version and their perception of my capability. And had my management style been questionable, I doubt I would have been able to produce the kind of work that I produced at the council. Without a doubt, and I'm sure you can vouch for that. You know that as a city council councillor, we came before this committee and reported on the work we were doing throughout the period of our term at the council. And throughout my first term, which I completed, I was one of the top performing councillors at the council. I executed my mandate, I did my work, I performed, I delivered, not only just delivered, I delivered timely in the best interest of the industry. And had I not had the proper or acceptable management staff, I believe that the members of the committees that I worked on would not have been that cooperative with regards to the delivery that they did. Because as councillors, we lead a group of people. And if you do not have the right management style, which is to motivate people to deliver, then you will not be able to deliver. So I think my work bears testimony for the fact that I had the right management style to deliver. And the exit interview you talk about is one individual, and I still insist I was never given an opportunity to respond to that. And other people who held contrary view were not given an opportunity to present their views to this committee. Now, to deal with the other questions that you've put forward to me, the second question you put to me is about, to use your word, you said, when is enough enough? I believe that this is an area whereby skills and knowledge among historically disadvantaged individuals is very limited. And when you get an individual who has a lot of experience, who has a lot of know-how in this particular area, it would be unfortunate if that skill and that knowledge is lost to this particular person. And I believe that I have the energy, the determination, and the know-how to be able to deliver both in my current position as a pension fund adjudicator, and should I be given an opportunity to serve on the SABC board, I will equally be able to deliver in that particular position. You will see from my CV that even as a practitioner, I had many different roles. I lectured part-time, I sat on many different boards, and at no point in time has my capability and my ability to deliver ever been questioned. When I take up a task and a responsibility, I dedicate myself to it, I work hard, and I deliver. And just to digress slightly, I have one other advantage. I believe I have the value of time because I do not have many demands on my time. I do not have a family. I do not have children. So I dedicate a lot of my time and my effort to my work. And excellence in my work is fundamental for me. And I believe that the SABC board is not a full-time position. It is but a part-time position, and I will be able to deliver. And if I'm given an opportunity, it is in an area which is not new to me. It is an area in which I'm qualified, and it is an area in which I am skilled. So to deliver will be easier and very effective. Now, the issue about my ANC background and how their perceptions is that the SABC has got political bias, etc., etc. I think with regard to that particular issue, I think it is very clear that it is one's constitutional right to belong to a political party. The only challenge is whether or not a person is an office bearer within that political party. I, for one, am not an office bearer in any political party. So, even though I belong to a political party and I'm brought up in a certain political environment, that is well within my constitutional rights. The only issue is that of whether one holds political office or not. Then, with regards to the perceptions of political bias within the SABC, I think you have correctly put it. These are perceptions. But nothing has been proven to date that there is actual political influence in relation to the operations of the SABC. There have been inquiries that have been undertaken, and those inquiries at no point in time have come up with anything conclusively that says that this political party has an influence as opposed to another political party. Until such time as there is something concrete that can be pointed to, I think we should actually accept that these are really, to date, just simply perceptions. Now, to deal with your last question, the issue of me being young, black, and female, and what value do I think I would bring to the table. One of the objectives of the SABC in terms of the Broadcasting Act is to ensure that it harnesses talent and ensures the training of young people within programming and within within programming specifically. I believe as a young black woman, I will ensure that the SABC gives priority to this particular objective. It is a very, very important objective in my opinion, because the media has a lot to do with how one perceives themselves. It's a very powerful tool. And I believe that some of the challenges that are faced by the youth today is because they do not see positive role models that depict themselves sufficiently in the mass media. And I believe that the SABC is a powerful tool by which this can be communicated to our young people. And as a member of the board, I think I would be instrumental in ensuring not only that the voice of the young people is better vocalized, but that they are also involved in the production process, which means, therefore, they will also be empowered indirectly. So I believe that is the value that I would bring to the table as a young black woman. And obviously, having walked in similar shoes to them, I would be more able to understand the needs and the requirements for that particular output on an urgent basis. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm going to take Mr. Peter, but just before that, just to set the record straight on one matter, the political office bearers are not directly disqualified in terms of this law. But obviously, to deal with the sensitivities, we as a committee and as parliament will have to address that matter. So that's the one matter. Ms. Musala, you raised a very important question of value of time on your side. You see? And you accept that. And the family and time that you have. But we don't want to also to deprive you of that opportunity of having a family, you see, by giving you too much work. You must actually, if we do that, you must also understand that we're doing it, taking your word for it. So that tomorrow, don't say that they lom zalalazo, deprive me to have a family and so on and so on. Maybe at this point you can also address this question of maternal leaving, just to give us the, you know, the assurance that it won't happen this time. I just want to put that question. Lastly, I'm putting this question to you because it was put to one of your fellow, one of your former colleagues, about ICASA being bound by the PSMA, and that during your term of office, you also receive the qualified support. The SABC will be subjected to the same matters, and what may give us the comfort that it won't happen again. I'll come back to you, Mr. Peter. I just wanted to deal with this issue together. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the reassurance that I'm not exempt from participating in other social and important activities within my life. With regard to the question that you raise about giving assurance that I am not going to leave, I think it's important to emphasize to the committee that during my first term at ICASA, I started my term, I completed my term, I did all of my work within the term and within the parameters that was required of me. So it's important to emphasize that I completed my first term. In my second term, an opportunity presented itself. I sat down, I made an assessment. Would ICASA be worse off, or would I be worse off as a consequence of making a particular choice? And I believe that both myself and ICASA were to some extent not worse off by my choosing to depart at the time that I departed at, for the following reasons. Firstly, obviously it was a career move for myself, but I believe that I was moving from one regulatory environment to another regulatory environment within the public service. So to my mind, this amounted to a form of redeployment. So it was not as though I was taking my skills away from the public service to the private sector. And secondly, the point at which I left at ICASA, I left before processes into the ECA had started, before, at the point whereby the processes into the ECA had just commenced. And I felt that it was the best time to leave, because had I left the processes midstream, then that would have been very unfortunate for ICASA. So I left at a time when the processes were about to commence. And as such, I felt that that was the best time, and to leave at a later date would have been more detrimental to ICASA. Now, to deal with the issue of an assurance that I will not leave again, I'm one of those people who, when I take on a task, I see to its logical conclusion. Not unless there are factors that mitigate otherwise. And with regard to the SABC appointment, I do not see such factors coming to the table, because the SABC, unlike the ICASA situation, is a part-time appointment. And it is sitting on a particular board as a non-executive member, whereas at ICASA it has more of an executive role as opposed to a non-executive role. So, in a nutshell, no, I do not believe this is likely to happen again. And it was due to circumstances at the time that made me leave ICASA when I did leave. But I do believe that I left at a time when ICASA would be able to recover from my particular loss. And also another important point that I forgot to emphasize was that at the time when I left, the number of counselors at ICASA had increased, which meant that there was more capacity to deal with the issues that were on the table. Now, the issue of the qualified report in terms of the PFMA. I think the PFMA, yes, applies to the SABC in the same way that it applies to ICASA. That is granted. But whether or not the SABC will be subject to a qualified report in the same way that ICASA was subject to a qualified report, I think really the comparison is not a fair comparison, because we're actually comparing apples with oranges. Why I say that is because ICASA, at the time when we got a qualified report, we had a chief executive who was under suspension. There were many different people in executive management who were in different acting roles. And over and above that, there were certain systems that had not adequately been put in place at the time. Now, with the SABC, I believe there is a chief executive there's a group chief executive who is currently in office. The executive positions are fully occupied right now, and there are systems in place. From the policies that I've been able to read about the SABC, they have full policies that are fully applicable, and as such, the challenges with regard to getting a qualified report in terms of the PFMA are then reduced, as opposed to the situation that we encountered at ICASA. And I'd just like to emphasize that I was at ICASA for a period of 5 years. And in the 5 years, it was only in the 1 year that we received a qualified report. In all the previous 4 years, we had received an unqualified report. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Peter.
Yes, my English is flower. Not only because love the Asian, but I think that also a birthday on the birthday of the Asian.
But the same age, you know, 95 years ago, but the same day, 1st of 8th of January, so I at least envy her for that. Ms. Forst touched on this exit report, and just looking at the report alone, the question that was in one's mind was, if the exit report is true, contested, uncontested, all of that, the question then would be, why wouldn't she take that, which she's been accused of, possibly to SABC, which we can't afford with all the disruption currently at SABC, or reported disruptions. Chairperson, I have just one question to her, and I, you know, in terms of her technical abilities, there's no doubt about that. It's rather, at the time, they've issued a license to SABC for 2 extra channels, 4 and 5, and yet they did, and the condition was the funding model, but not necessarily increasing the signal distribution, increasing the footprint of SABC. Now you could be on the other side, where I would continuously scream at SABC, but there's still a few million outside your footprint. First, when you were at ICASA, as part of a collective, what made you think to give them two extra channels on the current footprint? And now you're on this side, that current footprint is not big enough. Couldn't you see that it would have been, my view would have been that you should rather increase the footprint to say to SABC, cover all of South Africa, instead of giving the current small footprint more options? So how would you go about, if you should be part of the 12, to make sure that in a short space of time, that all of South Africa are being covered, particularly when it's incoming, everybody loves soccer, everybody wants to listen and see it. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Honourable Member Peterson, for your question. Yes, I completely agree that ICASA, at the time when I was a councillor, licensed SABC for channels 4 and 5 without considering the fact that there is a need. There is an even greater need to increase the footprint of the SABC. ICASA, at the time when this decision was made, was fully cognizant of the need to increase the footprint of SABC within South Africa. But by the same token, there is a legislative obligation that Channel 4 and 5 be licensed for the SABC. So ICASA was faced with a situation whereby there is the legislative requirement that must be met on the one hand, but by the same token, there are a large number of our people that are not getting access to the services that they should be getting in a democratic South Africa. So we then decided to take it in a systematic way by obviously meeting the legislative imperative and then leaving it to the SABC to then go out and get the funding in terms of the provisions of the Act to go out and increase the footprint. How would I then, should I be one of the successful 12 non-executive members, how would I then ensure that the footprint is increased? I think SABC should prioritize trying to source the funding. Obviously, we would need the assistance of government with regard to getting additional funding. But I would ensure that there is prioritization given to getting the funding to ensure that we increase the footprint, both from radio and the television side of the SABC imperatives and license. Thank you.
Any further figures? Just we'll come back to you. Let me take this order. Want to come up with it? Okay. Go ahead for that.
Let's figure it.
Okay, go ahead for that.
I would just ask Ms. Schlanger, aren't you overstating the usefulness of what you describe as your technical knowledge? Because you said because you had done the licensing for a sort of thing with the SNO and you'd worked on the 2001 Telecoms Act amendments and you'd worked on Centrex license, you said that that would be useful for the SABC because it has to compete in the converged environment. But aren't you really overstating? I mean, broadcasters will compete with broadcasters. Telkom is now going to compete with SABC on subscription TV and so forth. You see, the situation is that we have a number of candidates who, like yourself, are former regulators. But a number of them are people who are steeped in broadcasting. Whereas your work has been perhaps predominantly in telecom. And that's what makes the question, I think, pertinent. So, I mean, I'm trying to give you an opportunity to explain to me why. Aren't you overstating? I mean, why? We all know SABC must digitize and so forth. But in practice, you're going to appoint managers and staff to do the digitizing. Of course, the state is already paying the money. I mean, it's not that you will actually, you know, you're the board member. So would you like to expand or defend on that line of argument?
Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member Smith. If you recall, the experience that I laid out in relation to the legislation formulation processes and the licensing of the SNO was in response to a question about my CV. So I was given a background with regards to my experience and my CV. That's why I elaborated on my experience in relation to licensing of the SNO, drafting the license for the SNO, and also issues in relation to the Telecoms Amendment Act. Then with regard to the question that I was then subsequently asked in relation to what value do I think I would bring to the SABC if I was to be one of the successful 12 non-executive members, that is when I spoke about issues like the CENTIC license amendment, the migration from digital to analog. I'd like to take those one by one to explain why I believe I would bring value. Yes, you've correctly stated that there are other people who bring regulatory experience to the table, which is true. They do bring regulatory experience to the table. But I also bring regulatory experience. But I bring regulatory experience of a critical nature. SABC will be having its licenses reviewed in order to be given at licenses in the converged environment in terms of the ECA. Their licenses are going to be subject to conversion. Even though you will have technocrats in a, from the operational point of view who will go through the negotiation process with ICASA, but the final decision or the final nod on whether or not the terms of condition of their network licenses and their services licenses are acceptable or not, that will be the decision of the board. Because in terms of the Act, it's very clear that the board has control over the activities of the SABC, which to my mind states that the final say-so or go-ahead with regard to the final terms and conditions of the license that will be issued by ICASA will come from the board. And for a board member to be able to effectively give a nod to the executive management, they have to have know-how as to what terms and obligations need to go into those licenses. So, because I have sat on the other side of the fence, it will be much easier for me to be able to understand what are the favorable terms and conditions that should go into those licenses, both the network licenses and the services licenses from the SABC. So that's the one issue. Secondly, CENTIC and SABC right now have a relationship. CENTIC is the signal distributor for the SABC. Their license is being subject to review. And whatever terms and conditions go into that CENTIC license will have a bearing on the operations of the SABC going forward. Once again, go-ahead, finalization, implications with regard to those terms and conditions will be a board decision. And if you have board members who have intimate knowledge of these issues, but who also have experience in drafting those licenses, it's much easier for them to come to grips with the implications and to understand and to effectively make input with regard to the applicability of those terms and conditions. Thirdly, I'd like to emphasize once again that in answering the question of why I think I should be given the opportunity to serve on the SABC board, I say I bring another skill to the table, which is the ability to deal with labor-related matters. I was a commissioner at the CCMA prior, whilst I was still a practitioner. And the experience and the training that I got at the CCMA would be of great value to the board of the SABC, both from an operational point of view or even from a strategic point of view. And even the issue of digitization, even though you say digitization is going to happen, the fact remains, for SABC to compete effectively in a converged environment, these are critical issues. And you need that the people who formulate the strategy from a board level to understand the issues. There will be no need for me to be taken through the education of understanding the implications and the processes. Because of the experience that I have at ICASA, I will be able to understand these issues. And there's one thing that is very important to emphasize. When we sat as counselors at ICASA, we've made a conscious decision that there will not be counselors who will say, I'm an expert in telecommunications, and others will say, I'm an expert in broadcasting. We did a multiplicity of issues. Because at the end of the day, we were all equally responsible for the decisions that we made, whether they be in telecoms or whether they be in broadcasting. So at the end of the day, even though you'd like to say there are those who are more heaps in broadcasting and those who are more heaps in telecom, at the end of the day, all decisions were made by council as a collective. And as such, we all had equal involvement in broadcasting matters and in telecoms matters. But I'd also like to emphasize once again, we no longer live in an environment where broadcasting and telecoms are separate. We are in a converged environment whereby the skills from both are now required and must be merged. And as such, I believe that with the skills that I have, I will be able to assist in forming the strategic direction of the national broadcaster, should I be given that opportunity to do so. Thank you.
Do you want to respond?
Yes. I emphasize and I'll just say to that I stated that segment of the people of the there was never a situation called the agency. It carries
its own separate license. And I think I've been very categorical in saying it is the signal distributor from for the SABC, which is exactly what you have said, but in different words.
But why would the SABC want the network license?
Why should SABC want the network license?
Yes. I've never suggested that SABC would want the network license. I have said, Centech is their signal distributor, is the signal distributor for the SABC. So what goes into the license what goes into Centech's network license does obviously have an implication on the working of the SABC because they are their signal distributor.
Alright, I think we should leave it there. No, it's fine. But my understanding was that Centech's license is up for review, and the point that she's making that there is a relationship between Centech and the SABC. Okay, no, that's fine. Mr. Kumar?
Thank you. If you can agree, just explain to the committee what is on the table of the SABC mandate. It's a public broadcast, and I'm sure your friend that was related should be able to explain. Secondly, what is current funding model? And understanding the current funding model, could you then explain to the committee whether is it possible for it to achieve its objective and its mandate with its current funding model, and what is proposed to be an alternative and alternative funding model that can assist it to achieve its mandate, which you're going to explain to the committee. And lastly, the other details going from one hurdle to another, you know, from the issue of the blacklisting to Sikhali, losing the PSL rights, broadcaster to SuperSport, finally also the radio rights now that they're still negotiated, and then all type of issues that they've been going through. And what happens sometimes is that some of the board members who come there with quite good skills, qualifications, integrity, respect, honesty, they leave the institution battered, you know, their names get dragged into the mud. Do you not believe or think that in an event that happens, in an event that you're a board member, will that not partly affect your position as a CEO of the pension fund that you became? I'm just making an assumption about what could happen in the foreseeable future. I'm sure it might not happen. Thank you.
Please go ahead.
I think by being a person in public office, by its nature, nothing you do is not subject to public scrutiny. Even in the position that I sit in right now, as a pension fund manager, everything I do is subject to public scrutiny. If I'm appointed to the SABC board, what is done is what I will do in my role as a board member of the SABC will be subject to public scrutiny. And by virtue of the
fact that we have a democracy, democracy by its nature allows for different views and the exchange of different opinions on particular issues. Yes, we've had many issues that have been in the media about the SABC, principal among which the PSL, the Sikhali matter, the vacant dossier, there are many issues that have been put in the media in relation to the SABC. But one must be alive to the fact that even in those, even with respect to those issues, SABC has had a particular stance with regard to those particular issues. Maybe the stance of the SABC in a lot of the matters has not been as well publicized as the stance of many other role players within the process. But I still believe, as an entity, if people want to know the truth of the matter, they will go to the entity, give that entity an opportunity to respond and to deal with those issues. And I believe that I'm an upright person, I'm an ethical person, not only by virtue of being a member of the board I'm an ethical person by virtue of the profession that I've taken, which is that of the legal profession. And as such, I will do all in my power to ensure that I act in the best interest of the institution. And even if the media may hold a different view with regard to the operations of the SABC, so long as I, as a member of the board, am satisfied that we're working in the best interest of the institution and we are working in the best interest of the public broadcaster, I will not feel even for one second that my name is being dragged through the mud, to borrow the term that you're actually utilizing. So I'm alive to all these issues, but I believe that the truth and a proper explanation as to what are the intricacies of the matter will be the saving grace of the board, and I believe that I would like to serve on a board whereby issues will be clarified and be available for public consumption should the public want to understand the issues in that particular context when the need arises. So that's the one issue. With regard to the issue that you've raised on the funding model, the funding model of the SABC currently is in relation to obviously the license fees and in relation to funding that they get from the state coffers. There has been debates with regard to what is the best and most appropriate funding model for the SABC. As far as I'm concerned, right now there are obviously challenges with regard to the amount of money that's being set aside to fund the SABC. That is why right now Channel 4 has not taken off, because there hasn't been sufficient funding that has been put on the table. But I believe that it is necessary that there be a better understanding, and I think this is a challenge that we also faced when we're at ICASA. The people who control the purse do not necessarily engage in all the operational activities of a particular entity. So it is important for the people who control the purse to better understand what are the concerns and the challenges with regard to the public purse and getting access to that public purse. So if they were to better understand the operations of the institution, then it would make it easier for them to understand the imperatives of actually funding this institution adequately. So this is an area that would have to be worked on by the board to ensure that there is proper interaction with National Treasury to make sure that the money that is allocated to the SABC and its working is properly allocated and there's a proper understanding as to the legislative imperatives and the national imperatives of the entity going forward. Then the last question is with regard to the principal objectives and imperatives of the SABC. The SABC obviously is governed by a charter. And the charter clearly lays out, in terms of the Act, what it is that is expected of the SABC. It is obviously programming that ensures the increased use of the languages in this country, that ensures that there is harnessing of talent by South Africans, and that also ensures that the voice of the South African is properly heard and elaborated on. So I believe that this cannot never ever be underemphasized. As a public broadcaster, it is fundamental that there be proper compliance with the charter, there be policies that are put in place. We already know that the policies, the editorial policies are there, the language policies are there, the educational policies are there. It's important that those policies be utilized, properly emphasized, and they are put out, they are reviewed as and when is necessary to ensure that they meet the aspirations of the South African public at all times.
Give us what, how the SABC in your understanding in terms of percentages is getting their money. You talked about two sources only. Maybe you should complete the sources and maybe just give us your understanding of that balance. You've mentioned license fees, public coffers. Is that all in terms of your understanding, or is there any other source? And at what percentage?
Okay, for advertising that they get they get their funding from as well. Percentages, unfortunately, I cannot give them to you offhand. Those I don't know offhand right now. But they obviously do get their funding from advertising as well. But I would say the majority of the funding obviously comes from the public coffers that, from the state coffers where they get their funding in the majority. Then followed by advertising and license fees. The license fees are obviously minuscule because obviously the amount is very low that they get from the license fees.
No, I can help you there actually. They get 80% from commercial advertising, 17% from license fee, from license fees and other donations, and about 3% from the state. And that was the crux of the question where Khoto is saying, Mr. Kumalo is saying, how do you think should be the alternative? Because at this stage, the public coffers do not necessarily assist them that way. So it's just a challenge that you need to be aware of. According to Kuna and Ms. Yenge.
Considering your background, you know, information and knowledge, your experience that you're having up to so far, what impact would you make if you were to be nominated into the board? You know, I'm having two areas of concern. The very first one is the area whereby our 11 official languages are not all taken on board. There are these ones that are, you know, broadcasted nationally, and then there are those that are still lagging behind. Of course, considering the fact that ADVETS are contributing, you know, so much, and maybe as a result of the state contributing very little, you know, also the people the state is representing are suffering. So if you were to be nominated into this board, how would you ensure that you make a push in ensuring that every citizen in South Africa, especially falling within the 11 official language category, is able to hear his or her language being broadcasted nationally? That was my first question. The other area of concern is the question of the ADVET, you know. If you go to Europe or you go to any other country, the moment you land there, you really feel that this is not my country. Whatever style, language, you know, TV and all that. But our local stations, when they are being introduced, when they are being advertised, the manner in which they are being is being done, you know, it's Eurocentric. How do we bring in the culture, you know, the tradition of these official languages, you know, especially when you advertise them, especially when you introduce them to these stations before we go to this and that aspect. And then the other thing which one has realized is now harmonizing this aspect. At this moment, you're listening at this program. Maybe they're advertising, they're announcing. Let's say there is this program which announces maybe death and so on. And all of a sudden, Guaido comes in. Because Guaido is bringing in, you know, some money. And then the feelings of the community, you know, are being disrupted and so on. Let me pause here, or let me stop here. I think this is enough for you.
Thank you. Over to you, ma'am.
Okay.
Thank you, Honourable Member Nkuna. To deal with the first question about the official languages, I think it's an issue that has been a bone of contention for the SABC for a considerable period of time, as to having the 11 official languages being used at the SABC. And I think it is an area of principal concern. As I initially stated at the beginning when I was speaking about my perceptions of the public broadcaster and how I think it should be more responsive to the needs of the people, one of the manners in which the public broadcaster must be responsive to the needs of the people is that it must speak to the people in the language that they understand, which is your own mother tongue. That is a challenge, and it's an issue that the SABC, I believe, has done a lot of work in the past few years to try and remedy. But we are not at the levels where we should be. Because you will note that with SABC 1, there's a lot of the Nguni languages that are introduced there. And then SABC 2 is spread between English, Afrikaans, and the Sesotho and the minority languages, which are Tshivenda and Xhosa. And you find that it's still not sufficient. So I believe that I was reading the annual report of the SABC, and it is clear that there are moves towards ensuring that they get productions that are in the other languages to ensure that there is a proliferation of the use of more of the 11 languages. So there is a need to ensure that not only should we harness the talent and build skills among producers within those particular language groups where there isn't much input right now, but we make sure that going forward that there is a move towards ensuring that there's broader representativity and use of those particular languages. Now, with regard to the issue of advertising, it is very true. The advertisements are Eurocentric in their nature to a very large extent, but it's also because the people who make the advertisements do look at things from a Eurocentric point of view, which would then mean we need more people who have a perception that is different from that of those who currently make the advertisements right now, who will look at things from a more South African point of view, and who will speak to the South African people in the manner in which South African people have to be understood. But unfortunately, as things stand now, there is still limited influence with regard to the nature of the adverts that go out. But I believe that with time, there will obviously be improvement and growth with regard to the nature of adverts that you see on television, and that they will be more responsive to the needs of South Africans.
Thank you. Last question from Ms. Hengen.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, Mashallah. If you were to be appointed to the new board of the SABC, what would be your contribution in relation to this perception? I understand that you're saying the perception is something that is not proven, you know, but the perceptions are strong, unfortunately, that the SABC is biased. And then there are a number of issues that people are raising. Now, as a person, I mean, who wants to become part of that board, I assume that you have gone through the negatives and the positives of the SABC, and what is that threat you think it's needed to make the SABC to be a public broadcaster that it's supposed to be. So what do you think your contribution can be in correcting these perceptions about the SABC?
Thank you.
Yes, it's true that the SABC is a public broadcaster, and it is supposed to be a public broadcaster that represents the views of the public without any form of commercial, political, or any other form of influence. and perceptions are there. But I believe because the SABC is a public broadcaster, and because of its positioning right now, a lot of what it does is always brought under direct public scrutiny at all times, without fail. I think the way in which the SABC can ensure that going forward it is not repeatedly subjected to the perceptions that are currently in the media is for the SABC to be more public about what they do and how they make their editorial decisions. Right now you find that the SABC is more reactive than proactive. It is only when an editorial decision of the SABC is being questioned that the SABC will then go out, undertake an inquiry, and then publish the outcome of that inquiry to the public. I believe that if there are issues that could potentially be perceived as being as likely to put the SABC in a position where they could be perceived as being biased, the SABC should actually be proactive, put out the issues to the public even before they are brought under public scrutiny and questioning, to say that there is this challenge, this is the way we view it, in view of the legalities and the policies that exist, and therefore this is the approach we're going to take. Rather than waiting and adopting the approach that they have right now, which is sitting back until they're criticized and then being on a defensive mode. So it would be better then to be more on an offensive mode, meaning that they deal with the issues before they are put forth towards them.
Thank you very much, Ms. Madupi. Inshallah, where do I get Madupi? You know, we've got Mr. Madupi in my area there, very popular child. So you are named after his great-grandmother.
Can you do something for our fences? Yeah. Then can you do something for our fences? You know, you can tell me after later.
Okay.
I'm seeing you, I'm thinking of my fences.
Yes, I'm going to try and conclude the matter now. I think we've done justice to this interview. So I'm going to give you just a minute for your comment and closing remarks before we wish you good luck.
Thank you, Chair. There's just one question that that came from Honourable Member Khumalo that I didn't quite address correctly. I first would like to say, yes, I did get the percentages wrong with regards to the funding model for the SABC, because I got the percentages in reverse as opposed to putting them in the right sequence. But I think the answer still stands, that it is imperative on the state to increase the level of funding that they make to the SABC. Because if you're going to say you need the voice of the people to be more representative and to be more understood in the public media, then the state should be willing to dedicate the money to it. More especially considering the impact of the SABC with regards to the perceptions of individuals in this country and the role that the SABC plays within the democracy, within the perpetuation of democracy within South Africa. So it's very important that there be more state funding towards the SABC.
Agreed.
Thank you.
Anything else to hear from you? No. Okay. Good.
Thank you.
You're welcome and good luck. You'll hear from the From Rita, if anything. Okay, Ms. Mushala. Members, I want us to take a quick break. I don't see any fresh tea there. A break for about 10. And the candy is also. Let's just break for about 5 to 10 minutes and take the next one. We may call it in. I want you to have a look at it. I want to keep it.
He's here.
The one here, okay. The one that you were talking about.
Yeah. It is Walter. Walter's partner, who's my son's grandmother. I'm happy to be in the bed. I don't think you should take it with him. Who in your party is in science and technology? Okay. I know.
Would like something.
Because it's not relevant, I think, because it's not relevant, 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 because it's not relevant
Oh, yes. No, you should use. Yes, you put it here. Is it still going?